Hey folks, this is Christian, welcoming you to another edition of the Ice Age Farmer Podcast, mapping a path forward to prosperity, building self-sufficient and resilient communities, and sharing knowledge in the grand solar minimum. Today is Monday, November 6th, 2017, and this is episode 20 of the podcast. Got a heck of a show for you today. We're going to be kicking it off with some news. Want to be covering something that I already put out an alert about, the pneumonic and bubonic plague outbreak in Madagascar. There are since another 700 cases there, bringing the total to 2,000. But as well, I want to cover a new Marburg virus and share with you some thoughts from the physician who's written into the show before. He got in touch and we'll be covering that. We'll also be speaking to some of the grand solar minimum symptoms. I'll give a quick rundown what we've seen there over the last week, but won't spend too much time there because I want to get right then into an icebreaker and share some stories from the frontier, some tales that were retold by Caleb Warnock in a book of his that I think really shed some light on the importance of community and really how humans fundamentally work together to survive. Speaking of community, we'll then go into some viewer feedback, more on the herbal tonics that were mentioned in last episode, and also some feedback on how to address hypothyroidism, which we mentioned last time. Richard, an organic farmer who provided some thoughts in last episode, is following up with some information on nixtamalization of hominy and also sharing his experience with winter greens. We can augment some of the winter varieties that we've been talking about. We'll be then covering some daily steps that folks in our community are taking to bring themselves and their families closer to self-sufficiency. And then getting right into the main subject of today, which is health. How to maintain and take control, really. Take responsibility fully for your own health and the health of your family. Within that, we'll be talking about herbs, how to think about and use and prepare colloidal, or more accurately, perhaps ionic silver. And then I want to talk a bit about sprouting if we have time, because it's just such an easy and obvious way to keep nutrition and enzymes flowing into your body throughout the year, which is what you need to ensure you're actually getting the nutrition you need to stay healthy. Before we do all that, I do want to let podcast subscribers via Stitcher and iTunes know that I did post a video to YouTube about how to use different heirloom varieties of crops to chip away at the hunger gap. So the modern monoculture has really just sort of homogenized the varieties. We think of lettuce or potatoes, but in fact, there are so many wonderfully over time selected for certain qualities of each of these kinds of plants that you can find lettuce that will be hardy in the winter. You can find, so check out that video because it speaks to hardy varieties of some of those crops, long storing varieties, and then also the early varieties, which are those that are can quickly come out of the ground come spring, the quickest ones to harvest. That video is entitled Lettuce in January, Varieties for the Grand Solar Minimum, and it's worth checking out. I also added that information to the Ice Age Farmer Wiki. Between those podcast platforms and here on YouTube, we do have thousands of people listening to this podcast. And because I hear from hundreds of you, I can tell you, this is an unbelievably intelligent, critically thinking, and diversely talented group. And I am honored to be a part of it here with you. Thank you all for being here. With that said, let's get into the news. The Black Death has been spreading in Madagascar over the last few weeks. We've watched as the World Health Organization has put out multiple alerts, as have I on my YouTube channel, covered this since then last week. An additional 100 fatalities in Madagascar from between the bubonic and pneumonic plagues, and then 700 just in the last 5 days, bringing the total to 2,000. But the big news today, and this was brought to my attention by the physician who's written in before about the increase in fungal infections, wondering if this was due possibly to the increased wetness that is associated with, just wet summers that we see historically and now in the grand solar minimum. He writes to pass on information about a deadly outbreak of a rare and highly fatal virus that is known as the Marburg virus. Now, it's an Ebola-like virus. It's actually a bit worse and highly fatal, like 90% fatality rate. I'm not a doctor, and so I don't want to speculate. Instead, I will share what this physician has said. Quote, many new studies have proven that Black Death was not only pneumonic or bubonic plague. Many corpses have been found to have an Ebola-like component. The bug on this report, the Marburg virus, the new outbreak going on at the same time as pneumonic plague, which is an Ebola-like disease, only more deadly than its cousin Ebola. My question is this just coincidental, or is it because of the solar minimum? And, like during the Maunder minimum, we will now see a marriage between pneumonic plague and Marburg. Is the crap about to hit the fan for 50% of us? He asks. Now, for the folks who are always really ready to say, oh, there's always bubonic plague, this is nothing new, it happens in the American Southwest from time to time even. Yes, that's true, that's the bubonic plague. I have that referenced here on the Ice Age Farmer Wiki, including the link to the CDC's website with a map of these incidences. The difference here is both that we're talking now about the pneumonic plague, which is different and worse, and that these occurrences have happened before the wet season even began. So that leads us to believe that things are going to be worse. We know that these summers have been wet, and that caused lots of crop losses and other even side effects that I've covered in previous episodes. But so too is this now perhaps a side effect of that. And so particularly when it is going to be entwined with this Marburg virus. As I've said before, this is something that we should, and I will, continue to keep an eye on. Moving on. So what do we take from this? It's not something that we just want to be afraid of. So how do we inform our daily steps towards self-sufficiency given this new intel? Well, I think it speaks directly to being your own doctor, to building your own skill set with respect to maintaining your own health, staying fit, and gaining perhaps a working knowledge of herbal remedies or how to produce and use ionic silver, colloidal silver. So I'll be covering just that later in the show. Now, in other news, as winter lands hard across the Northern Hemisphere, the symptoms of the grand solar minimum are ubiquitous right now. There is literally a non-stop stream of news coming from my Twitter and Facebook, Ice Age Farmer. I do encourage you to check those streams out because it's simply too much to cover here in a way that does it justice. Briefly, I will reference that the hard freeze arrived 2 to 4 weeks early for much of the eastern United States. Robert Felix covered this on his site, iceagenow.info. Meanwhile, yesterday, the 5th, New Zealand was hit with a huge blast of cold and a snowstorm down there. Now, bear in mind, in the southern hemisphere, it's just about to be summer. So we are seeing winter come early in the U.S. and across Europe. And Sochi just got a ridiculous snowstorm. And equally, we're seeing New Zealand chipping away at the summer. So the growing season is shrinking from both ends. And that's why I mention these things here. They inform our ability to grow food. So briefly, in the other symptoms, we saw biblical hailstorms in Australia, Bogota, Colombia, and then again in New South Wales in Australia. As well, earthquakes, multiple in the Arctic, very unusual, Wyoming, Tonga. In the French Alps, there have been over 140 in the last month. People are freaking out. In major ones in New Caledonia and Indonesia, we've seen extreme floods in Chennai that were fatal. Actually, all of these floodings were Mexico, which resulted in mudslides, flooding in Central America, in Colombia, Mombasa, Kenya, even in New Hampshire with a house floating down a river, which was complemented by 130-mile-an-hour gusts of wind. Queensland declared October the wettest since 1975. We've been talking about how the grand solar minimum brings about wet conditions, which is trouble for crops and people alike, as well as causing widespread power outages. Tanzania also record rainfall, causing flooding and extreme losses. In fact, each of these things I've just mentioned involved fatalities, destroyed residences, and wiped out crops. These are around the world, folks. Record-breaking snow in the Colorado Mountains the other day, 16 inches yesterday in Wyoming. Early snow in Seattle and China, unseasonably even. Tornadoes in Turkey, which are rare there. Typhoon Damri just was striking Vietnam, was fatal there. Popocatépetl spewing ash in Mexico. Iceland's Bárðarbunga is also spewing ash. Stromboli in Italy. These are truly remarkable times. Everything I just mentioned can be viewed in detail. Just check out the links from my Twitter stream. If I have time, I'll put them in the show notes as well. But these events speak for themselves. I don't need to sensationalize them, and I certainly don't mean to spark fear. We don't have time for fear right now. We've got important things to do and a future to build. A new reality to manifest that really requires our focus. Our whole consciousness needs to be centered in the right place. If we're in fear, we're not going to be manifesting what we need. We can't fight the reality of what's coming, but we can work to manifest a better future within that reality. You know, when I saw the Antifa announcement about going crazy on the 4th of November, I thought that was interesting. And then when the Department of Defense initiated a grid down exercise also on that same day, I noticed that. I tweeted about it, but I kind of felt, I relaxed when I saw the DOD jump in as well and how hard they were striving to engineer fear within us, within the population. Now, I'm not saying that they're not capable of doing things and that there's not danger. The events may be scripted and contrived, but they're still dangerous. I think we cannot let these engineers of fear, these social engineers, distract us, and they're trying their best. Believe me, you can tell. We cannot let them distract us, again, from the reality, the new realities that we need to be manifesting right now. I really do have an unbelievable sense of urgency about this, but we, like I said, do not have time for fear. We desperately need a calm, rational, and disciplined, exhaustive exploration of the solution space, and then to weave together the results of that search into a path forward. That's why I don't want to get caught up in these fear porn things or in cryptocurrencies. I look at the 1859 Carrington event, and I take from that that every day we're playing Russian roulette with the sun. That is what drives my sense of urgency, not the DOD. All right, let's get back to the news. In Puerto Rico, it's been almost 2 months now after Maria. The grid is still down in some parts. There are now bacterial diseases emerging due to the fact that people are literally crapping where they eat because people don't know how to live without power. They don't know how to survive anymore. So they are just drinking from contaminated water. This is a problem. I share this to illustrate that the grid is fragile. We've talked about this ad nauseum now in these episodes. It's not possible to simply turn the power back on after a major disruption. And yes, without the running water, then the power on, people don't know how to survive anymore. So they actually are a danger to themselves to that extent. It's hard to watch, and it doesn't bode well for most folks. But if you're here, you're already aware of what's going on, and so you're making adjustments to the way you live, and you will be ready. So take that to heart. All right, that was really a lightning round of news. A news blitz there, because I don't want to dwell on that stuff. Let's now go to the icebreaker. A little bit of history that I thought would be fun to share. These are stories from the frontier, which come from Caleb Warnock's Forgotten Skills of Self-Sufficiency Used by the Mormon Pioneers. Within that, there are, yes, there's some information on the skills, but there's also some recollections, some stories that have been found in journals from people that were actually, I guess, the pioneers who were actually moving out to Salt Lake City area and starting those settlements. And they're really remarkable. Now, just for context, these two stories both come from right around 1848, which, as we can see here, is just after the Dalton minimum. So things should more or less be settling back to quote-unquote normal. But we'll see, in fact, that from the journal of John Alma Vance, frosts were happening as late as May 28th, killing, as we see, potatoes and beans. And you can just tell from this journal that it's a series of planted this, frost, loss. Planted this, lost it to crickets. Just a series of problems. Because the growing conditions in Utah, where these people were moving, were different than what they had known before. And so they needed to adjust their methodologies. And until they did, they lost their crops. And the only way that they survived was because they were able to get more seed from other people in the community. Like this guy. Here's another one. Quote, "In March of 1848 was a very pleasant spell of winter. On the 10th, William Matthews planted his corn, urging me to do the same. But as our next year's bread depended on the good use made of the few kernels of corn, I waited. A cold spell of winter set in April, and Mr. Matthews' seed corn rotted in the ground. He had other seed corn to supply and plant a second time, and a third time we planted the same patch, and he was put out with my slow actions. My corn ground was plowed, ready for 1 month, and on the 10th day of May, I finally planted the long-saved seed. It soon sprouted and came up. It grew finally, and to my surprise began to shoot near the ground as I never saw Spanish corn grow before, and had from 6 to 8 ears to the hill, and we had sufficient for bread for 3 families, including the ornery William Matthews, who I'm sure did better next year because the community's survival as a whole depended on it. But this is, you know, if William Matthews had moved out to the middle of nowhere, thinking that he could go it alone, and then planted his corn too early, he would have, that would be the end of William Matthews. It takes a village. And I want to end on one more. This is the tale of Derek Baker Huntington. Through all my travel in the battalion, to Pueblo, back to Laramie, and on to Salt Lake Valley, I carried in my wagon a bushel of wheat, and during the winter of 47, slept with it under my bed, keeping it for seed. For 3 months, my family tasted no bread. We dug thistle roots and other native growths, and had some poor beef with a little milk, no butter. Early in the spring of 48, I rode 115 miles to Fort Bridger, bought a quart of little potatoes about the size of pigeon eggs at 25 cents each. I rode 115 miles round trip. From these, I raised that year about a bushel of potatoes, but ate none of them. I planted those in 1849 and have had plenty of potatoes ever since. But that's a 2-year process he went through, getting a quart of potatoes and riding 115 miles. So those were great stories that I enjoyed reading and wanted to share, because that's the story of a man breaking out into a self-sufficient lifestyle, but it took him 2 years of very careful planning and modest means to position himself there. And with that, I'd like to move on to our viewer feedback. Today, Richard, the farmer in Indiana, follows up on his advice from episode 19. After mentioning hominy on the podcast, I was thinking perhaps people should understand they must treat corn with an alkaline substance like pickling lime to help balance out nutrition. And I will add here that wood ash can also work, which you are very likely to have a constant supply of even in a post-collapse situation. He continues, "Fresh, untreated corn will make cornbread, but will contain inferior nutrition. We find Sand Hill Prevention Center to be a good source for open-pollinated corn seed. They also have many other open-pollinated seeds and heritage poultry breeds. We find in our climate, as far as winter greens production, lettuce usually falters in early January. not from the cold, but due to the damp conditions from a high tunnel. High tunnels produce a lot of condensation from the contrast of hot and cold temperatures. We have great success with spinach, baby brassica greens, carrots, kale, and turnips through the winter, though. Our climate makes it difficult, this is Indiana again, to winter over anything outside unprotected due to our often rapid temperature extremes, high winds, and limited snow cover. We utilize fabric row covers to further insulate crops grown in our high tunnels throughout the winter. Johnny's Selected Seeds provides a great guide for when to start winter crops based on the available daylight. This is just a guide, and exact dates will vary from location to location, depending on temperature and daylight. Adaptive Seeds offers some interesting varieties of kale to help with winter hunger gap. We enjoy Western Front. Thanks again, Richard, for writing in with that information. Richard included also some links to several of the things I mentioned, as well as to information on why corn must undergo that washing with an alkaline substance, which is called nixtamalization. And I will drop those links in the show notes for you. Next, we heard in episode 19 from Zionte Girl about tinctures she was creating. She's a trained herbalist, and she and I are working now on getting some of that information onto the Ice Age Farmer Wiki, which I'm looking forward to. I'm thrilled. She also mentioned as the need for natural ways to manage hypothyroidism. Looking briefly into that, one thing that I did want to mention is that one of my favorite herbs, ashwagandha, which is an adaptogen, which means it will stabilize your body's system. So if your blood pressure is too high, it will work to lower it. And if it's too low, it will help raise it. It's just plain good. Ashwagandha and tulsi, or holy basil, which is funny because I just ordered some of those seeds from rareseeds.com, can both be used to help with the thyroid. I also got a note from The Watchman 2011, who said, "For hypothyroidism, I recommend looking into the work of Dr. Ray Peet. RayPeet.com is his website. He's got a newsletter of monthly articles. He, in my opinion, is the authority on hormones and thyroid, and is one of the few who is ahead of his time and is good at connecting the dots. His approach is mainly diet. There's a website called RayPeetForum.com where other scientists and people who follow him talk about the same stuff. And if you want to know about a health issue, you can type it in there and get results for it, usually with some good nuggets of truth to help out." Thanks for that, The Watchman 2011, and we'll have to check that out. I actually really want to talk a lot more about health, but ironically, my son is just getting sick, and I need to go take care of him right now. So I'm going to have to cut this one short and invite instead dialogue. What are you doing to manage your own health and to increasingly make sure that you and your family don't need to go to the doctor? And as always, let me know what daily steps you're taking to move closer to food sovereignty and self-sufficiency. Item of the day, I will be including a link in the show notes to a headlamp that I ordered a while back and basically use every day to get stuff done. And especially now that daylight savings time has hit lots of us, there's just too much to get done before that sun goes down. So I actually will put a second link to another headlamp that has a green light and that you can use to work on your indoor growing farms without worrying about messing up the plants' cycles. That is all for today's episode, episode 20 of the Ice Age Farmer Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and learned something from the great folks in our community, physicians, herbalists, and farmers. All of us working together to map a path forward to prosperity, build self-sufficient and resilient communities, humans that survive together, and share knowledge in the grand solar minimum. Let's go build great things.